In Matthew chapter 4, we learn about Jesus' ministry. In Matthew chapter 4, verse 23, this is perhaps the best summation of what Jesus did in his life. If you've ever wondered what a normal day, if there was such thing as a normal day, if you've wondered what a normal day was for Jesus, just look at Matthew 4, 23. That sums up his life. It sums up what he was doing day by day. There in Matthew 4, 23, Matthew tells us that Jesus was going throughout all Galilee. He was on the move. Jesus, he was involved with people. He was invested in their lives. So he's going throughout all Galilee. He's not on a bus. He's not on a train. He's not on a plane. He's walking. So he's traveling throughout all Galilee. And as he's traveling, he's looking for people. Jesus wasn't on some sightseeing tour. He wasn't there to see the sights of the day. Jesus, he came to earth to involve himself in the lives of people. And people started to hear what Jesus was able to do. And they were drawn to him. Now that makes sense. If somebody was able to teach the way Jesus taught, if somebody was able to heal people the way Jesus had the power to do that, people would be attracted to that. And in Matthew 4, we see that large crowds are coming to Jesus. They're drawn to him. Some perhaps are drawn because they want to, what is this guy going to say? What's he going to say next? We want to be a part of that. Now, other people were drawn to him because they were hurting. At the beginning of Matthew chapter 5, we find Jesus looking at the people. You look at Matthew chapter 5, verse 1, before Jesus launches into the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus, he sees the crowds. He sees people. And from there, he goes up on the mountain, he sits down, and he begins to teach them. I want you to think about that first phrase in Matthew 5, verse 1, seeing the crowds. What did Jesus see when he looked at the crowds? Now, from the end of Matthew chapter 4, we know that large crowds are following after Jesus. These people are flocking to him. They're drawn to him. What kind of people did Jesus see in the crowds? Well, look here at Matthew 4, verse 24, verse 23. Jesus was proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, and he was healing every disease and every affliction among the people. His fame spread. Jesus, he's famous because of what he's able to do. His fame spread throughout all Syria, and they brought him. Now, notice who is coming to him. They brought him all the sick, those afflicted with various diseases and pains, those oppressed by demons, those having seizures, and paralytics, and he healed them. When Jesus sees the crowds in Matthew 5, verse 1, don't you imagine these are some of the people that are there? People who are sick, people who are struggling with various ailments and diseases. And Jesus, he's looking out at the crowd. He's looking out at the people. And he sees people who are hurting. People who are beat down by life, distressed by illnesses. Now, if Jesus were here this morning, he no doubt would be involved with us. He would be invested in our lives. And if Jesus was standing up here today and he was looking out at the crowd, and just like we read in Matthew 5, he sees the people. What would Jesus see this morning? He would see people who are battling cancer. He would see people who are facing surgeries, heart struggles. He would see people who are struggling to rehab and recover from various procedures. He would see people who were scared, knowing they were about to go through some surgery. He would see families who were hurting, wondering if their loved one was going to beat cancer. He would see pretty much the same things. Because it's life, we struggle through life. What we see in Matthew 4, 23 and 24, all of the people who are drawn to Jesus for healing, all of the people who are flocking to him to get help. Isn't it the same today? We still need Jesus, don't we? We still need help. We still need strength. In Jesus, he's talking to this crowd. He's talking to these individual people. Now make sure when you see that word crowd, you understand it's people. People make up the crowd. And he begins to teach them. And one by one, we've looked at the Beatitudes, the mindset that we need to have through these struggles. That's who people that Jesus is talking to. He's talking to people who were struggling with life. And through that, he's telling them, here is the right way to live. Here's the right mindset to have. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed are the peacemaker. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness. Jesus is talking to these people who are struggling with life, and he lays out a different mindset, a different way to look at life. And then in verse 13, something very unexpected. After Jesus lays out all of these things about how we think, our mind, he's talking to these same people, as we mentioned last week, and he says to them, you are the salt of the earth. Now, Jesus, don't you realize who you're talking to? You're talking to people who are beat down, who are oppressed. You're talking to people who are struggling with diseases, struggling with illnesses. They're demon-possessed. They have all of these things in their life. And you say to them, you are the salt of the earth. Jesus, are you looking at the right people? Need to change your glasses. Don't you realize who you're talking to? These are people who are struggling. These are people who are beat down by Rome. These are people who are just having a difficult time with life. Luke 4, something similar. Jesus, here he stands up in the synagogue and he's talking to people. And he sees people who are poor, people who are held captive, people who are blind, people who are oppressed. But the Bible teaches us that Jesus came at just the right time. At just the right time, Jesus came to earth. Now, what does it mean when Jesus refers to these people as the salt of the earth? Now make sure you see what Jesus says here. Jesus didn't stand up in front of them and say to them, I am the salt of the earth. Now that would make sense. That would make sense to these people. They were drawn to Christ. They came to him for help. For Jesus to stand up and to say, I am the salt of the earth. I am the light of the world. That would make perfect sense. That's not what he says. You are the salt of the earth. Even though you're beat down, even though you're oppressed, even though you're struggling with Rome, you're struggling with diseases, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Now there's a reason that Jesus compared these people to salt. We started looking at some characteristics of salt last week. We just made it to the first one. One of the reasons that Jesus refers to these people and to us as salt is because of what salt does. Salt has the ability to destroy. Jesus making this comparison It shows us what's going on in the world. Now for us, we look at society, we look at our world today, and I'm sure a lot of us think, this has to be the worst it's ever been. I can't imagine a time in history when the world was in a worse place, when society was in a worse state. The lack of morality, the lack of godliness. And we look at our world and we think, man, this place, it's hard. It's a dark, dark world. It's one thing to identify a problem. When Jesus came down here to earth, do you think when Jesus left heaven that he didn't realize where he was coming? Do you think Jesus, when he left heaven and he came down here to earth, he was going to stay at a resort? That everything here was going to be perfect? I was talking to Brett this morning, and when the group arrived in Panama, the place they're staying didn't quite match what they were expecting. That happens sometimes when you travel to different countries. Those pictures, they look a lot better on the internet. And you get there and you're like, this is the same place. And you feel deceived a little bit. When Jesus came down here to earth and he got here, he didn't look around and say, wow, this isn't what I signed up for. I didn't bargain for all of this. Jesus knew exactly what he was going to face. He knew what he was going to get into when he came down here to earth. He knew what Satan had done. And so we look at this world. It's fallen. It's sinful. It's bad. We know that. I'm not breaking any new story to you this morning, but this is what we have to realize. When are we going to wake up and understand that we're the solution? We look at the problems, and you can listen to people talk about how horrible the world is, the direction of our nation, the direction of our country. What about the direction of your family? What about the direction of your own life? Do we understand that we can be the solution? We can't become friends with the world. We must choose Jesus. In 2 Corinthians 10, 5 and 6, Paul is writing to the church of Corinth, his second letter, and he actually uses this word destroying. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God. Now you see what's going on right here in just that first part. There are some attacks against God. There are ongoing attacks against the Word of God, against God's knowledge. We are to combat that. We are, so to speak, to stand in the gap. And we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. And we are ready to punish all disobedience whenever your obedience is complete. Do you see where this fight begins? This battle that we're in, and make no mistake about it, guys, we're in a battle. One of the worst things that we can do is to think we're at peace when we're in the middle of a war. Just go look at Great Britain's history. We are in a battle, and the battle begins right here in our minds. We take every thought captive. Now that's hard. That's challenging. But that's the pathway to be able to live for God. It starts up here in our mind. When you look at Jesus in John 13, Jesus washing the feet of his apostles, we see what happened to Judas. Satan got into Judas's heart. He got into his mind. We take every thought captive. You're a product of the political correctness movement. It's been the silence of the church, the silence of us Christians. We are to destroy these arguments. We are to destroy these false agendas working against God. Silence is not an option. Salt, it's at work, it's active. In the battleground, it starts in our mind. Here's another characteristic of salt. Salt, it flavors. One of the things I love about preacher training camp, you get down there and you're just surrounded by people that you like to be with. Some of my best friends are with me there at preacher training camp. Had an opportunity to talk to the students this week. I taught one of the lessons and I made this comment to them. The majority of my best friends are right here in this room. And the people that I'm with out at preacher training camp, they make me want to be a better person. There's people like that that we read about in the Bible. I wish I could have personally known Ananias. You know, that guy that was sent to go reach out to Saul? Hey, I want you to go and reach out to this guy. What? Lord, don't you know what this guy's doing? Don't you understand what he's been doing to us, to Christians, to your people? But he went. I wish I could have personally known Barnabas. I wish I could have known Timothy. Our young people, they need good role models. They need good peers to be with. Timothy and Titus. Parents of daughters, when we love our daughters to date Timothy, Titus. I think it would have been a tremendous blessing to have known some of these people from the Bible. What about Lydia? Lydia, she was there on the riverside there in Philippi. Here comes Paul. Paul's looking for people who are interested, people who are seeking. And Lydia, she obeys the gospel. And what does she do immediately after? She reaches out to her family. She was concerned about other people. I wish I could have personally known Lydia. And all of these people that I mentioned, all of these individuals from the New Testament, Barnabas, Timothy, Titus, they're salt. They fall into this category of salt. They add flavor to life. They make life better. I've been blessed to have a lot of people like this in my life. Being surrounded by a great church family, what a difference it makes to be here on Sunday, to be together on Wednesday, to have the fellowship opportunities that you guys make me want to be a better person. You make me want to be a better preacher. When we look at people like Barnabas, when we look at people like Lydia, do we ever think to ourselves, this is who I need to be? On Wednesday night, I drove up to Lindsay. I was scheduled to speak on their summer series on Wednesday evening. Kevin Langford, he drove up with me, and we were driving to Lindsay. We got there early. You never know what you're going to encounter on I-35, so you're driving up quite a bit early. We make it to Lindsay about 6 o'clock, and I said to him, hey, let's go by the cemetery. One of our good friends is buried there, Tony Hall. And we drove by, and I hadn't been there since the actual burial, but I remembered vaguely where he was buried, and we drove around and found the tombstone. And it was just a reminder of a good friendship, a reminder of how he blessed my life, how he blessed our lives. We look at people like this, and you guys, you're probably thinking about somebody in your mind. Maybe you're thinking about your spouse. Maybe you're thinking about a childhood friend. Maybe you're thinking about that person who brought you to Christ. But we have an image, there's a picture of somebody that we're thinking about. When I think about Tony, I always think about him in the summer wearing shorts, wearing loafers with white socks all the way up to here. And I'm like, why are you wearing that? That's horrible. But you probably got an image of somebody in your mind, what they looked like, how they helped you. As we think about these people, do we realize that this is who we need to be? that we need to be that person that brings flavor into life. It's what salt does. And you may be struggling. You may be exactly like those people that Jesus is talking to here in Matthew 5. You may be battling an illness. You may be battling financial struggles. You may be having issues in your marriage. All of these things may describe you. But there's something higher for us to reach to. Something beyond all of these struggles that we face in life. When Lydia became a Christian, she knew there was something more important than selling purple. I've got to get my family to Christ. I'm going to use my influence to bring my family to Jesus. She flavored life. One of the things that we cannot produce more of is time. We can't produce more time. We can't buy more time. No matter how much money we have, we can't go purchase a few extra hours for our life. Life is time, and our time is short. The older I get, the more I realize that. And it makes me want to be selfish with my time. I want to surround myself with people that encourage me. I want to surround myself with people that help me. I want to be around people that bring flavor, Christian flavor, to my life. But I also want to try to be that person. Another characteristic of salt as we move on. Just made it through a fourth last week. I got to get through the other three-fourths. Salt works at the expense of itself. Salt destroys. It has a destroying quality. Salt also works at the expense of itself. Salt is used up as it performs its job. If you've ever been outside on an icy day with sidewalks, you put salt on it and you just see it melting away, but the salt itself is also destroyed. Isn't that what Jesus did? Wasn't that the life he lived? Greater love has no one than this, that one lay down his life for his friends. This is at the end of Jesus' life. In John chapter 13, 14, and 15, Jesus is trying to prepare his apostles for what would seemingly be an impossible task. You talk about trying to fill somebody's shoes. Try to fill Jesus' shoes. That's what Jesus is trying to prepare them for. And here he lets them know what relationships are all about. Greater love has no one than this, that one lay down his life for his friends. Jesus wants them to see the importance of people, the importance of relationships. In these words, they had to just take on so much more meaning when they saw Jesus actually do this. When they saw him crucified, and this had to take on a completely different, he actually did it. He gave his life for us. 1 Peter 2, Peter, one of the followers, one of his closest friends, talks about what Jesus did. And Peter understood, he has left us an example to follow in his steps. Jesus, what he did, that's now the pathway for us to follow. You are the salt of the earth. Now Jesus, he gave up himself. He used up his life for us. Jesus certainly was salt. But that's not what he's saying in Matthew 5. He says, you, me, we are the salt of the earth. 2 Timothy 4, we read some of the last words of the Apostle Paul. He's at the end. What a life. What an amazing life. But he knew he wasn't going to live forever. Guys, we're not going to live forever. All of us will be at this point. All of us will reach the end where the time of our departure has come. And Paul, as he reflected back, he's rewinding his life and he's looking back on everything that he did. And he's writing to this young man to help him and encourage him. And Paul, he could look at his life and he could say, I have poured out my life for Jesus. I've laid it on the line. And if there's anybody that could write that, it was Paul. He did that. He laid it all on the line for Jesus. When this point of time reaches for us, when our time of departure has come, all of us can rewind our life and we can reflect back on what we've done, how we've lived, and all of us will be able to say, we have used our life up in these ways. Our life is going to be used up for something. Will we be able to write what Paul wrote? Last thing I want to share with you about salt. Salt, it preserves. All of these qualities, you look at the big picture. Why does Jesus call people salt? Why is he talking to this crowd that's following him throughout all Galilee, this crowd that's battling all of these diseases, all of these sicknesses, this crowd that's oppressed and beat down by Rome? Why does Jesus call them salt? Well, salt destroys. Salt influences. Salt is used up at the expense of itself. Salt, it also preserves. There are some things, some valuable things that need to be preserved today. If we were to just bring this down to a family level, if we were to just open the door to our house and walk into our home and we see everything laid out. We got the kids' rooms, we got the TV, we got the kitchen, we have everything in this house. Within that house, I want you to think spiritually. Spiritually, there are some things that need to be preserved in that house. God's word, it needs to be preserved. It needs to be shared. It needs to be read and talked about. In Proverbs, we read, buy truth and do not sell it. Guys, if we can't do that in our homes, I don't know that there's anywhere else to do it. Buy truth, don't sell it. In 1 Corinthians 15, Paul, writing to the church of Corinth, I deliver to you as of first importance. This is more important than anything else. And he goes on to share the heart of the gospel. The church, it needs to be preserved. Seek first his kingdom. Commitment. We need more commitment. Faithfulness. Now just consider this list. Truth, the gospel, the church, commitment, faithfulness. If we don't preserve these things, who do we expect to do it? If we don't preserve these things in our home, moms and dads, if you don't preserve these things in your home, nobody else is going to do it for you. If we don't preserve these things here in this church family, who do we expect to do it? Salt, it preserves. There's a reason Jesus called these people in Matthew 5 salt. There's a reason if Jesus were here today and he was talking to us, he could say the very same thing to us. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. When Jesus saw the crowds there in Matthew 5 verse 1, he looked out and he saw people. People just like you, people just like me. He knew they needed help. He knew they needed hope. He knew they needed salvation. But they also needed a purpose. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Maybe this morning, you're in that crowd. You're struggling with life. You're struggling with illness. You're struggling with sickness. Guys, Jesus is still here. And he can still heal you. If we can help you in any way this morning, we invite you to come as we stand and sing together.